nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
And their team for organizing this workshop and inviting all of us here. It's a pleasure to be here. Vlad asked us to give us our opinion about some futuristic ideas in optics. And since the title of the session today, this afternoon, is metamaterial, I'd like to share with you some of our futuristic ideas and to see how what happens in the next generation of metamaterial, at least some of the opinions that we have in this regard. Now, metamaterial, you know, has been around with us for several years. In fact, its predecessors, you know, which is called, you know, complex media, artificial dielectrics, and so on, have been around for more than several decades. And a lot of interesting, you know, application, potential application has come out of this. Now, you've seen, you know, in the past several years, there are many different interesting and exciting samples of metamaterial have been made by experimental groups. You're all familiar with these structures. And also potential applications that came out of this quite exciting. Let me just, you know, list some of them here that all of you are familiar with. Cloaking, perfect lens, ultra-thin cavities that breaks the diffraction limit and size dimension of the cavities and waveguides, transformation optics, you heard from John today, hyperlens, and epsilon near zero supercoupling and extreme parameters metamaterial, metatronics or optical nanocircuitry, and light bending, we just heard from Federico Capasso's work and Vlachelievs and other people. The question, of course, is what is next? And in fact, that's the spirit of the workshop, you know, what is the next generation of metamaterial and the application we can think of? In order to answer that, I find it useful sometimes is go back and see some of the other fields, you know, how have they evolved, you know, particularly at this stage of the development. And there are many examples in the interest of time. I just share with you two very quick examples that I find it, you know, quite interesting. One, of course, is the concept of analog versus digital concept. This, of course, has been very powerful, you know, in the field of, you know, electronics. And in fact, it's a balance between simplicity and complexity. In other words, rather than using, you know, an analog function that has a lot of, you know, information in it, you sacrifice some of the information in favor of simplicity. So you actually send the information in terms of zeros and ones. That I find quite exciting, particularly from Boolean algebra point of view. Another one, of course, is the area of simplicity and complexity in computer architectures. You know, we all use the smartphones these days. Steve Jobs recently passed away. But one of his vision was this issue of balance between complexity and simplicity, and parametrization and conceptualization. We all know that if I want to find the temperature of West Lafayette today, I just touch that icon over here. Now, somebody else has done the job for us behind that. But some of us that have been around a few more years remember that we used to actually write computer codes like this. And so what happened that we went from here to here? That type of simplification and abstraction actually have been quite useful. So the question I'd like to pose is that, are we at that stage in metamaterial that we need to conceptualize, we need to parameterize, and we need to actually have a balance between simplicity and complexity? And I argue that indeed we are at this stage. So in order to see what we can do is, let's look at this one. Can we have metamaterial gadget? And in order to see what is metamaterial gadget, let's ask, what is the electronic gadget? Of course, we're all familiar with electronic gadgets. We start with these elements. And you have seen from my previous talks that I'm very interested in connection between electronics and photonics and lump circuit. But of course, from that, we get to these functionalities, iPad, iPhones, and so on. These combinations have been quite interesting. So let me pose the following question, because that's the spirit of the workshop. So we are at the stage that metamaterials start with these elements, permittivity, permeability, conductivity, and so on and so forth. Can we put these things together and have gadgets that would do functionality for us using metamaterials? What would that gadget be? So, of course, that's up for discussion. That's what the spirit of this workshop is. But let's say, for example, I would like to have metamaterial that would do functionality for us. Could we have metamaterial machines? What would that machine do? Well, maybe it can actually do signal processing for us, for example. Input and output does something interesting. How about can do mathematical operation for us? Can it take the derivative of a function? Can it take the integral of a function? How about computing? And how about pattern recognition? And the list can go on. So indeed, that might be an interesting future, you know, for metamaterials. So let me share with you, by the way, four ideas in the interest of time, and only I talk about two of them specifically, but I just list four. One possibility is to see how metamaterial can actually affect non-reciprocity. Now, we know metamaterial can help us to tailor permittivity and permeability and so on. But of course, material parameters are not just those two. Reciprocity and non-reciprocity, particularly things like Faraday rotation, that have been very well established in microwave, but in optical domain usually is a weak properties. Can metamaterial help us to actually enhance and boost that property? Indeed it is. In fact, that's a work in progress in my group. Here, for example, we have designed a sub-wavelength circulator made combination of a magneto-optic material with plasmonic material that would give this, actually the size of the structure is lambda 0 square over 20, and yet still can actually do circulations. Another one is the rotation of the dipolar field in a very, very small volume that actually shows the non-reciprocity. And another one that we are currently working on is a combination of epsilon near zero material with Faraday effect, which indeed can give us something that resembles the photonic version of topological insulator. These are all work in progress. Another possibility is what we learn from the concept of metamaterial. Let's take that into other domains. There have been a lot of work going on in acoustic metamaterial and so on, in elastic metamaterial. And one of the things we have done, we just actually have this paper and archive, you're welcome to look at the details of that, is that how we can actually take the concept of metamaterial into Schrödinger equation and into tailoring the effective mass of the electron. And in this structure, actually, we have shown that by combining, you know, material like, you know, mercury telluride and mercury cadmium telluride, you can actually create a super lattice in which the effective mass of the electron would be zero in one direction, but would be very large in the other directions. Very similar to what we do in metamaterial, for example, when you combine ENG and MNG together. And indeed, this is the energy momentum structure that we obtain. Again, the detail you can find in this archive paper. The third possibility is what I call it digital metamaterial. And that's what I'm going to talk about in more detail for the rest of my talk. And the fourth possibility is what I like to call it signal processing metamaterial. In the interest of time, I only have time to talk about these two. But the other two, I'd be more than happy to talk to you offline anytime you want. What is digital metamaterial? And what do I call digital metamaterial? Well, I showed you this slide before, and I said I'm very fascinated by this comparison between analog and versus digital concept. Now, George Boole developed this algebra, Boolean algebra, and we all know that this plays a very important role, by the way, in electronics. And when that was introduced, actually really revolutionized the concept of electronics, immune to noise system, you know, and so on and so forth. So you sacrifice the detail of the analog, signal in favor of a simplicity of only zeros and ones. So you only use two values, zeros and ones, and you can actually have the values of the function you want. Can we have a Boolean metamaterials? Can we do something like that in metamaterial? In order to answer whether we can or not, let's go and see how actually electronic people did this. Well, how did they done it in signal processing? Imagine that you have a function of time, a simple function of time, and you would like to digitize it. How do you digitize it? First, you sample it, then you get these values, and then you quantize it. And when you quantize it, for each value of this, you assign, using Boolean algebra, a series of zeros and ones. Then you transmit these zeros and ones, and in the receiving end, you get this one. Again, you use the Boolean algebra, but you go from the digital to analog direction, and you get this. And then you pass it through the low-pass filter, and you get the original function back. Question is, can we do very similar things in metamaterial? In other words, could we have metamaterial bits? Could we have metamaterial bytes? The answer is yes. In fact, imagine that you only have two materials to play with. So imagine you fix your frequency. You say, well, at that frequency, just give me two materials and nothing else. Can I build any epsilon I want just using those two materials? Just like what zeros and ones do for a signal. So in that case, the question is, if I just have two materials with epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 at that frequency of interest, can I combine them such that I will have this variation of epsilon as a function of x? The answer is, in principle, you can do that. So imagine, for example, particularly in the field of transformation optics, you would like to have epsilon as a function of position, let's say three-dimensionally, in this case, let's say two-dimension for simplicity. And what you do, you can actually basically sample this. And at every point, you quantize the value of epsilon unit. So then you say, okay, if I want to have this epsilon in this cell, can I have these pixels only consists of epsilon 1 and epsilon 2? But the question is, how do I arrange these bits in order to get that effective epsilon I want for that particular cell? Indeed, this one can be done. If you look at this, for example, let me assume you have a cell that consists of 3 pixel by 3 pixel over here. You're only allowed to put epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 there. And the question is, what is the effective epsilon of this structure when the electric field is in this direction or in that direction? Well, that's, of course, the effective medium theory. You can do that. You can use, for example, circuit analysis to help you to start with. And if you do that, you notice it's interesting peculiarity. So imagine you would like to design a cell, digital cell. And we all know that if the electric field is parallel with this, you get the effective epsilon like this. If the electric field is perpendicular in this direction, you get the effective epsilon like this. Okay, that just comes from effective medium theory, very well known. But here's an interesting catch. If your epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, both of them are positive, the effective epsilon xx and effective epsilon yy are bounded by this two range. So it cannot go beyond your epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. Okay, that's one restriction. We didn't have that problem with the zeros and ones. However, the good news is that if you make one of these negative, so let's say epsilon 1 positive and epsilon 2 negative, in principle you can break that bound. So in this case, you notice that epsilon xx is still bound. But epsilon yy is outside this bound. And that just comes directly from effective medium theory. So let's see what happens, for example, if I have a cell that consists of 9 pixel by 9 pixel, and I have only allowed to put two materials, one with epsilon 2, the other one with epsilon minus 3, and gradually I change the number of pixels from one to the other. So you notice that the effective epsilon xx would follow standard effective medium theory, and it's bounded between minus 3 and 2, but effective epsilon yy is outside this bound. In fact, you can get the values around, 20, 30, even though your original bits is only 2 and minus 3. You can do that. You can actually increase the number of pixels, and just like in digital electronics, you can actually get closer to the analog function as you want. In fact, as you increase the number of pixels in the cells, you notice that you can actually arrange with all those values in between, so you have a more resolution as it's supposed to have. So let's say, okay, how good this will compare. So let's do a very simple test. Let me assume I have an object, a cylindrical object, and I would like to see how this cylindrical object viewed from outside. So what I do, I assume that I have a cylindrical object with this epsilon infinitely extending this direction, and I'm going to look at the scattered field coming out of this. But then I compare that with a digitized version of that. So this is a digitized version of this, only consists of two materials over here, 3 and minus 6, one of them positive, the other one negative. Here we actually follow the Drude model and we put the imaginary part as well. And then we look at, first we start with the far field and compare the field of these two, and then we come close to the near field to see how close these two fields are. So let's start with the far field, 3 lambda away from the axis, and we compare this one. This is the real part of the scattered field. This is the imaginary part of the scattered field. And the curves are so close to each other that you cannot even distinguish them. So obviously they look identical from the far field. But let's come closer. You come closer, still they look. So these are actually, each one of them are two lines that you see over here. It's very hard to distinguish them. Real part, imaginary part. Come closer. You begin to see, some minor variation over here. Even come to the near field, half wavelength apart, then you start seeing a little bit of variation. That's very good. So from the outside world, these two columns look the same. Digitized version and the, homogeneous version. If you go inside them, of course, the fields are different. And that's, of course, the essence of effective medium theory. So with this, we decided to design a lens that would, it's a standard lens, but then it requires of epsilon to have this variation, this inhomogeneity. And rather than using material with all this inhomogeneity, we wanted to use only two metamaterial bits. And that's what we did over here. So the bit consists of these pixels, only consists of two materials, one of them air, the other one metal, over here. You put them together, you notice that the digitized version of this is like that, only consists of two materials, and look at the result. And it works very nicely. It works as though that epsilon has had the values that you wanted. So, of course, this comes back from effective medium theory, but that will open up an interesting possibility that the design of the material with a different epsilon U1 can be done with only two metamaterial bits, just like what digital electronics did with only zeros and ones. So let me switch for the remaining of my time to the next topic, and that's signal processing metamaterial. Now, we notice how the digital version works over here, but the next question is the following. Can I design a metamaterial with all the inhomogeneity and everything that you have there such that it will give you a functionality? In other words, do some function for you. What do I mean by that? Imagine you would like to design a metamaterial that when you give an input function, F, you get an output function, G, and this function is related to this operator. Now, for now, I'm assuming it's a linear operator. Obviously, of course, nonlinearity will bring other interesting things over here too. Now, I mean, signal processing has been done before a lot in optics. Optical signal processing is a very, very mature field. A lot of exciting things going on. And by the way, No, this is not. It's a very useful field, yeah. And for example, the very good example of that is Fourier transforming, as a lens would do Fourier transforming and so on and so forth. But particularly, let's ask the following questions over here. Can we design a metamaterial that would actually do differentiation? That if I put a function in front of it, the output of that would be derivative of that function. So that's what one of the things we decided to do. I'm sure there are different ways, but we decided to follow this approach. We decided to follow the approach of taking it into Fourier domain, of course. And, of course, in the Fourier domain, we have to have this multiplication. So I don't have time to go over the detail of this. I'd be happy to talk to you offline. But what we did, we started with this. We started with graded index fiber, which is a parabolic variation of the epsilon. And this is very well known, that if you have a graded index fiber, if you put a function in front of it, if the length is right, at the end of it, you get the Fourier transform of that function. Then you design a metasurface over here, and this metasurface is designed that will give you this filter function, let's say for differentiation that we want. So when you get the other side of it, would be the multiplication of these two, and then you put another green over here, and you get over here, it should become the derivative of that. Now, this is only one way of doing that, it's not the only way, but particularly we are interested in this because our goal is not just to have a structure that would do this, but particularly, we are interested to do this thing translationally invariant. In other words, what if I get this metasurface and I expand it and I merge it into the green at the same time? In that case, I will have a metamaterial that's independent of the z direction, but still do the function I want. Meaning, if I put a function over here, I get its derivative. Now, what's the advantage of this compared to this? The advantage of this is that any place you go in the middle of this, you get the fractional version of the differentiation. Now, fractional derivative is a topic in mathematics that has a lot of interesting features, particularly in signal processing. Again, I don't have time to talk about it, but this is another area of interest because we can actually have a metamaterial that will give us the fractional differentiation. So let me show you some examples of simulation we have done. So we start with this function for our metasurface, and has a real and imaginary part of epsilon and mu for that structure over here. The rest is green with the mu 1, but epsilon varying. And if you do that and you put this function in front of this structure, you notice that at the output, you get its derivative back over here. This is a full wave simulation of the structure we have. Just to give you an idea, by the way, this size is about 15, 16 times free space wavelength. And this one is about 17, 18 times free space wavelength over here. So this metamaterial over here is doing differentiation that we have over here. Let's put another function in front of you, a triangle. You get its derivative over here with some noise, of course, because this is, remember, some of the rays is coming over here, reflects back. If this was infinitely extended, this would have looked better with a lesser noise. How about if, okay, you notice over up to here, this metasurface is very compact, is very thin. But what if we get this metasurface and extend it through here, and repeat the input, you get the output over here. Very nice. Still it would do differentiation over here as we planned, but now we have translationally invariant system, at least up to here. How about second derivative? So you can do the same thing. So here we design a metamaterial that would do second differentiation. You put this function in front of it, you get at the output of it, the second derivative of that function over here. And things can go on. We design another metamaterial that would do convolution over here. So you can see that, you know, by doing that, you can actually expand the design of a metal material to have, you know, signal processing. This is just only a few examples, but it can go on. How about if you take it to the next domain? Can we design a metal material as metal machine that I mentioned such that it will actually solve differential equation? So my goal is to design a metal material that would solve, let's say, this differential equation. We are halfway there. Why? Because we design a metal material that would give you differentiation. So what if I do this? If I design this metal material that I showed you right now, I put a function over here, I get this derivative back there. What if I have a feedback system? If I bring this feedback system over here, then in that case, I make this guy equal to this guy with some coefficient there. How about a system like this? So if I design this metal material that I just showed you that we did, and we put it in this actually interesting system of, you know, the light beam coming over here, the eigen solution of this structure is a solution to that differential equation. Now, this might be one way of doing that. Another way of doing that is just to make it periodic. So the eigen solution of this will give you a solution to that differential equation. And things can go on. So let me stop over here by just telling that, you know, I just listed four possible ideas over here. And I discussed two of them in some detail. And so one is the effect that metal material has is in non-reciprocity. That could be quite exciting directions because non-reciprocity is not really that strong at optical frequency. In microwave is. But these are some of the exciting direction of metal material. Other one is the concept of metal material in quantum electronics. And that's what we call it transformation electronics. The same way transformation optics. This would be transformation electronics that you can design the effective mass of the electrons, really going at the nanoscale, at the electronic scale, to design a custom-made electron's effective mass. And we are theoretically have shown in that archive paper that you can do that by actually having these super lattices. The third idea, the idea of digital metal material, simplicity. Again, I emphasize simplicity versus complexity. If I can just make any epsilon I want by using only two epsilons only, that simplifies the things tremendously. And the fourth idea is to actually have a metal machine, to actually have a metal material that would do functionality for us, like mathematical operation, solution to differential equation, and so on. I realize, by the way, this might relate to the idea that used to be known as an analog computer. In fact, people in electronics, they looked at analog computers some decades back. It didn't fly because there was some limitation on the, you know, like a drift of the electrons and so on and so on, had the issue. I'm hoping that metal material can bring us, you know, another possibility over here, because then that would directly work with the electromagnetic fields rather than just with electronics. And with that, I thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.